This is tape number 368, December 22nd, 1978, side two and part four on the tragedy known as Guyana. Those of you that listened to the House Select Committee on Assassinations this last November watched the spectacle of Mark Lane with Duncan Ragsdale, their co-guardians of Grace Stevens, and here was this important witness that Lane should have been protecting as an attorney. He checked her out of the Tennessee Mental Hospital after being 8 years there and took her to California, somewhere in Orange County, and then took her back to Memphis to his home. And before the House committee hearings, they talked about her mental condition, and it was decided between the various people on the panel and Mr. Duncan Ragsdale and Mark Lane that no purpose would be served in having Grace Walden here at this time. I thought that was interesting. If Lane sincerely believed that she was a primary witness and that she was in good care, that they should at least have seen the woman, just as they should have had James Earl Ray up there again telling about his experiences instead of third or fourth person parties removed from him talking. The judge said that they have to have a counsel for her, and Ragsdale was assigned to this case. He had never met Lane before, and he didn't know Grace, but he was assigned, and Ragsdale and Lane were before the committee prior to Grace Stevens being represented by Mark Lane. A group of doctors came on and talked about her mental condition in the hospital, the 8 years that she was confined. Then Lane made a big scene. He didn't act like an attorney who had waited this many years to represent a person, a primary witness, before the House Select Committee. He made a big scene and screamed to the panel, "You have violated confidential doctor and patient relationship," which they probably did. He said, "You violated ordinary conduct and destroyed Grace Walden," which they certainly tried to do, but he could have brought her in. And he accused them, "Until this moment, I couldn't accurately know how bad you were." He accused them of being corrupt and evil men, which they were. Then he said, "Grace takes no drugs at this time. She's living a normal life, and this is Gulag Bulva." He was referring to the institution in Tennessee where she was confined, and he said, "You all make me sick." And he got up and stormed out of the room. He left Mr. Ragsdale with the information and medical memos, "Keep her locked up until James Earl Ray's trial is over." And there was a lot of indication in the records that she was, in fact, a political prisoner. But he didn't bring that out as an attorney. This was the one chance in a lifetime he had a client. He let down James Earl Ray. He let down Grace Stevens. And at the very time that all this was going on, November the 14th, was when Leo Ryan was planning to go down to Guyana. And Mark Lane must have heard about it that afternoon because he kicked up a storm. And in the middle of the hearings, he was representing a client, Grace Stevens. In the middle of those hearings, he tore out like a bat out of hell and didn't even come back. And Mr. Ragsdale was left with the information. Lane didn't even stay in the room. And you know he must have prepared something. It was on radio across the country. And here was his hearing. And at that time, Leo Ryan said, "I'm going down to Guyana." And Lane had corresponded or told him, "You can't go without me." And Leo Ryan said, "Who is Mark Lane to tell me when to go? I'm going anyway." And Leo Ryan arrived in Georgetown November the 15th, early in the morning, and had phoned Charles Gary and Mark Lane. And Mark was in Washington for the House Select Committee November the 14th. So he literally tore himself out and was just, he says, coincidentally sitting on a plane going to Guyana with Charles Gary. And his behavior was really weird because Lane had to get in. The congressman couldn't get to Jonestown. But Lane got through and said, "Just give me a little time." This is a quotation from a book and newspaper articles. "Give us 2 hours to talk in Jonestown to see if they want you to come." And Jackie Speer, Leo Ryan's aide, said, "You're stalling, Mark, you're stalling. Let's get the show on the road." Well, considering the correspondence of Terry Buford and Jim Jones about getting Grace Stevens down there, I think it's important that somebody from the wire services interview Grace Stevens and make sure she is alive, living at Mark Lane's house. Can you see Grace Stevens, this witness to the Martin Luther King assassination, and Terry Buford from the International Banking Assassination Front team of Jim Jones and Mark Lane in a cozy little house scene in Memphis, Tennessee. Mark has moved down to Tennessee, the place where this corrupt governor works and these various officers that have been fired. And in the book, The Suicide Cult, in the back of the book, it tells the story about Charles Gary and Mark Lane and about their departure from there and how Mark had separate food. It said Lane, the specialist in conspiracies, confided he had known something odd was going all along and kept it from Charles Gary. He also knew about suicide plans, but so did the U.S. agencies, including the State Department, the CIA, and FBI. They were aware of the suicide plans, and Lane also heard that they were going to lace the sandwiches with drugs, so he took along his cough drops, and knew all along that the agencies were also familiar with the suicide plans, which in fact turned out to be true. But was Lane just a representative also of those agencies? So the question is, because the way he tore out of the congressional hearings, because of the speed with which he had to get to Jonestown, because he had to get there first, also because of the unidentified dead, and one of the boats went out, and there's an article this week that they were instructed, leave Saturday and don't come back until Sunday. Is there any chance at all that Gray Stevens is there? We'll know in a few weeks if we get enough news people. You might call the FBI in Memphis, Tennessee, and ask about this. Call Nicholas Hurek at the New York Times. I've called, and I've called the various desks at the Washington Post, and you reach a dead end. And it seems to me if they really wanted a story to follow this up, after printing this little tidbit about Lane and Gray Stevens, they would follow it up. But I've reached a dead end from the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the State Department. So maybe you can needle them a little and find out what's behind this. The National Labor Caucus has an article which is interesting and is a continuation of some of the questions I asked last week on tape number 367. I referred to that New York Times article, December the 4th, 78, and talked about the man who allegedly married Debbie Layton, George Philip Blakey. Her name is Debbie Layton Blakey, and you have that tape. Most of you are getting this whole four-part series. You can look that up in the literature with it. I'm going to read you an article by Jeffrey Steinberg and show you how it relates to the past work that I've done. It opens up a few more doors and windows to think about until we continue next week. This article is dated December the 5th, and it said, information released yesterday in New York Times, that's the article I referred to last week, cross-gridded with reports from Caribbean sources that strongly indicate that Reverend Jim Jones and the People's Temple were involved in illegal channeling of mercenaries into Angola to fight against the Angola government in 1975 and 76. The overall command was a mercenary deployment set up and coordinated by Henry Kissinger and British intelligence, the same forces behind the creation of People's Temple and its eventual establishment in Guyana. You notice that under finances and under countries, I have England, and also I have to add Canada. I didn't put that on the list. But the Canadian banks and the British banks were indeed responsible for the deposits in Georgetown and the Jim Jones purchase, or not the purchase, but the leasing of that land. It says, key evidence for this charge appears in the front page feature of New York Times, December 4th, by Robert Lindsay, on the background of the Layton family. The Layton family member, one of them was from the American Friends Service Committee with a deployment into People's Temple. The father, a former cult member, Deborah Layton, we went into that before, whose brother has been indicted for murdering Representative Ryan. He confessed this week that he was behind the whole plan, even though he didn't shoot Ryan. He engineered this whole thing. The father, it says, was a chemical warfare expert, which we went into last week. But it says Deborah Layton was sent to Britain during the late 1960s to study at the British Friends School. She became acquainted with a British national, Philip Blakey. Blakey, a member of the Friends, and Layton returned to the United States. Remember, she said she married him, but it wasn't consummated. Both of them were members of the People's Temple. In 1974, Blakey was sent to Guyana to prepare Jones' operations there. You know, I've been stressing how important it was those years from 1973, December of 73, when the land was obtained, up till 1977. It was used for uses we'll never know until hundreds of old black people were brought down there as a front. The tally's been made now. They're mostly old black women, a bunch of old black slaves with a white entourage. Back to this article. It says, according to highly reliable sources in the Caribbean, Blakey was in Angola from 1975 to 76, functioning as a mercenary against the Angola government while still a member of the People's Temple. During that same period of time, members of an Eastern group, which a Brooklyn-based black nationalist cult, were involved in gun running and drug running. And they were sending mercenaries into Angola under the auspices of the World Council of Churches and the Ford Foundation's Interfaith Council. The East also established a center in Guyana, just miles from the Jonestown settlement. And it turned out this week, in this article yet, that there is indeed a large settlement of people right next to Jonestown. It was supposed to be isolated, but there were operations going on there. You see, according to the way I cross-file, where it talks about gun running and drugs and narcotics, I'll put that under 31 in my categories of drug running. And also, if you notice my list under the conspiratorial links, number 65, I made this list 2 weeks and then updated 3 weeks after the Guyana murders and had the World Council of Churches, for reasons, into this various interlocking conspiracy. And this article mentions the World Council of Churches. I didn't have the Ford Foundation yet. I might have guessed the Ford Foundation would be in it, but we have to add that to the list here involved. It said that they established centers in Guyana, miles from Jonestown. Blakey, who I mentioned as being a very important person, was not among the Jones cultists who perished in Guyana. He is presently in Barbados, having obtained and captained the People's Temple trawler known as the Albatross 3, and went on a Caribbean tour during the mass suicide. The Albatross 3 is registered in Panama and is believed to be involved in large-scale drug and weapons running. And again, that goes back to Section 68B, which I'm adding the country of Panama, and we put it under weapons and drugs. And it also goes again to tape number 294, November the 6th, 77, that I referred on the other side, that had to do with drugs and weapons running, narcotics and gun running, that involved the assassination teams that killed Martin Luther King and John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. This Caribbean net and the School for Assassins, of course, there was one in Mexico, and then I believe that that one had been moved down to Guyana. But in this article, it talks about large-scale drug and weapons running, and it says, Blakey's profile as a mercenary handler and a graduate of the British Society of Friends Network is known as the Fabian Society British Foreign Nest, subverting the United States through its various affiliations. It mentions the Friends operation being infiltrated. It provides another level of powerful evidence that the entire Jones evidence was pre-programmed and controlled on a fine-tuned basis by professional intelligence channels associated with the London Tavistock Institute. That's the one of mind control, the original mind control plans that work in conjunction with Alan Dulles of the CIA and Reinhard Gehlen, and it is affiliated in the United States with the MKUltra project. They concluded the article by saying, a rigorous investigation of Blakey's career, and particularly its intersection with that of People's Temple attorney Mark Lane, would provide the requisite information for the resolution of the case. For those of you who are taking the tapes on Guyana or not familiar with the past tapes that I have made and radio broadcasts, I've talked about a man in British intelligence named U. Trevor Roper, who wrote a book on how Hitler died that is not necessarily absolute final chapter on Hitler. There is a lot of information that he possibly escaped and went to Argentina and Antarctica. And U. Trevor Roper could have pulled the biggest hoax of modern history by writing about Hitler's death in the bunker. His book came out just a month before anybody even actually got into the bunker. And then Mark Lane wrote his book, Rush to Judgment, with Trevor Roper writing the introduction. And Mark Lane has been the biggest obstacle to getting the truth out about the political assassinations and the way they come down. And he's covered the John Kennedy assassination the way that you, Trevor Roper, covered Hitler's so-called death. And the story of Mark Lane going back to England or the possible connections to Blakey. See, this mystery that the Labor Caucus writes about, this Blakey profile, we have to find out because, of course, there's no way of knowing now, but Mark set up the House Select Committee on Assassinations, and then as soon as their offices were set up and they began working, he left Washington, D.C. and moved to California and disassociated himself from them. And G. Robert Blakey became the head counsel for the House Select Committee. And, of course, there's always the ridiculous question that I asked last week, and I ask it again. Is there any relationship between that Blakey and the Blakey that came from England and then went to Ukiah with Mr. Layton's daughter, Lisa, and with their German connections, German banking connections, and scientific and military connections and clearances? They went up to Ukiah, and Jim Jones went to Brazil, went up to Ukiah, where they all merged with Mr. Tim Stone, who's a lawyer from Stanford, graduate from Stanford, who set up the foundation work and the work for Jim Jones up in Ukiah. And Blakey had gone on down to Guyana and was one of the first people to set up that property. So we have to find out who he is, and the Labor Caucus is right. The interaction of Lane and Blakey will be the answer to a lot of questions that we need to know. The Los Angeles Times has a long article, December the 4th, 1978. Mark Lane got $10,000 fee paid by the People's Temple to launch an attack against anybody who criticized the People's Temple. That was a nice little fee, and Lane's job was to offer a counteroffensive for people that were criticizing this operation down there. He would use the media and be the spokesman in the media, have press conferences to defend Jim Jones. Now, this is important because Lane has always used the media to attack the researchers of the assassinations, and I just wonder how many tens of thousands of dollars, or if he's pulling millions out of the Swiss accounts now, if he's taking a cent of it as a payoff for what he's done for the last 15 years. He's put down people that have done fine work, to Chirac and Lillian Castellano and Sherman Skolnick. I think I've mentioned some of these to you, and his strategy is to use the media to keep repeating his same old bullshit over and over about Dealey Plaza and threatening to sue the government, that they're harassing his witnesses and hurting his witnesses, where he's their worst enemy, and using the media and press conferences and college lectures in order to absorb any interest in the Kennedy assassination and divert it away from anybody else who would shed the light. I'm going to quote some sections from this LA Times article because it's really important, and it's so typical of the way Lane not only worked with Jim Jones, but the way he worked with the people who were doing work on the Kennedy assassination. He ran down an article that was going to be printed in the National Enquirer that was unfavorable to Jim Jones, and he showed it to Gene Brown at Los Angeles Airport, and was given $7,500 cash for stopping an article, showing it to them, and stopping this article, which would have exposed the People's Temple. Lane's strategy was, according to this document, it was planned September the 27th, 1978, that Mark Lane was going to have a strategy, a $10,000 fee to use the media, and he was to use public relations offices and fundraising in Congress and have a counteroffensive against anybody who picked on Jim Jones and the People's Temple. It was to be a national campaign coordinated from a Jonestown embassy in Washington, D.C., and he would establish a three-story building, which Lane now owns across the street from the Supreme Court, and put down anybody, as I say, who attacks Jim Jones. This campaign was, according to Mark Lane, 2 weeks after Lane first heard of People's Temple. Now, this is in the Los Angeles Times. 2 weeks after he heard of it, he was going to plan a campaign. Now, this is supposed to be September 27th, 1978, that the memo begins the offensive. So that means that he only heard of Jim Jones early in September, which you see by the other memo found down in Jonestown can hardly be true, because it was early in the year that Terry Buford was going to meet Lane personally because talking on the phone would be too hot. Lane's strategy, according to this memo dated September 27, 1978, was to attack the CIA, the FBI, the IRS, the U.S. Post Office, the Federal Communications, Alcohol and Tobacco and Firearm, that they all were harassing Jim Jones. Now, you see, this is what the New York Times article is talking about December the 8th, that he was feeding the paranoia, if there was any down there, because actually the truth is that Jim Jones had favoritism of the CIA when he was in Brazil. He had the favoritism of the FBI, who never investigated any charges in the interest of the family, and who also allowed all the bodies to rot so we wouldn't know what is going on there. For 4 days, the FBI has been part of this terrible scandal of identifying and covering up since the murders down there. He got special favors from the church in terms of tax breaks in Indiana, and certainly accumulating millions of dollars that were unaccountable for in these various banks. Mark Lane accused the post office of interfering with Jim Jones' rights, and the truth is that Jim Jones himself, the People's Temple, were hampering with the mail and censoring and telling people what to write and keeping letters away from their family. And then he accused Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms of interfering with them. And it actually is probably the case that they were more involved in getting weapons there. They were not investigated when it came to the DA's office, Mr. Freitas in San Francisco, that there's guns and many rounds of ammunition and so forth going down there. ATF didn't investigate at all, and he had the favoritism. And he had the favoritism of the Federal Communications in the way the radio messages went through. And instead of bothering him, they were letting him do Morse code and three-way messages and so forth that were actually illegal. And he was getting away with all that. Lane had another method of attack, which is interesting because this is the one he used for, again, the researchers into the Kennedy assassination or the Martin Luther King assassination or Robert Kennedy. He said in the memo, "It is apparent various newspapers and freelance reporters have participated in efforts to destroy Jim." So he suggested that they counteract with lawsuits filed against the agencies, which is one of Lane's great things. He has a press conference all the time. As I said before, "I'm going to sue this agency and show millions of dollars of damage have been inflicted against Jim Jones," where actually he's collecting anywhere from $13 million in overseas banks and $3 million cash in gold and diamonds. Now, Lane said that 3 weeks before Congressman Ryan made that trip, about November the 1st, was the first time that Lane learned how serious Jonestown was. That's when Terry Buford, came to see him in New York. And October the 5th, he had a press conference that I talked about on the first tape on Guyana praising Jim Jones. But after this woman gave him all this information, he had it 3 weeks before Leo Ryan went down there. He didn't tell Leo Ryan what was going on. Lane came out of it alive. Ryan was dead. Charles Gary came down there. They stayed clean. They weren't drugged, and they stayed alive, even though Mark Lane knew 3 weeks in advance that Congressman Ryan was going into something like this, and that this actually was a place where there was an adequate diet of just rice and gravy, and that he had millions of dollars in foreign banks and $3 million in the house at Jonestown, and that they had hit squads and assassination teams, and that there were brutal beatings of persons, and that they were staging mass suicides as early as October 77. He was told all that. Other things Mark Lane knew 3 weeks before these 913 were killed is that there was no way they could escape, that there was certain death, that people could only leave with Jim's permission, and they were not allowed contact with any people out in the outside world, and that this library of Marxist books that he was supposed to have and Christian books were a lot of baloney, that most of the people were illiterate and couldn't even read the books, and that it was just a front for acting as if they were Marxists or interested in those political doctrines. Lane knew that and covered this up and let Leo Ryan walk into this nest. Lane knew that there were problems in Jonestown when he went down there. This is a long article from the Los Angeles Times, but it goes into the intrigue of Lane using the news media and how he was going to use it to protect Jim Jones and attack the critics. This was Lane's method of counteroffensive dated September the 27th that he suggested for Jim Jones, the counteroffensive memo. Contact the left publications. Have them do in-depth articles of the temple. Use Mother Jones, the socialist newspaper in Chicago. In these times, that's another socialist newspaper, The Guardian. Lane's always used The Guardian, and he's used the left. He had Larry Flint buy up the LA Free Press, and that collapsed. Plant articles in the left. In other words, the left looks ridiculous. Lane comes out a millionaire out of this whole thing. He can come out with a lot of money, but tie the whole left up with Jim Jones, and oh boy, when the deaths all come, the suicides plants in 77, won't the left look ridiculous? A congressman who was speaking out for the oppressed, at least getting involved, Leo Ryan, caring about the prisoners or the families down there, is wiped out. But the technique of Lane is so insidious because he's planted stories all over the country in various alternative or underground newspapers about the serious researchers or tried to damn us or discredit or get himself blown up with his various press conferences. When he has a press conference, those are the only people that used to come until the Guyana story broke. Lane suggested this is how you handle the press, the counterintelligence operation. He calls it a counterintelligence operation. Here's a man who has been fighting, supposedly, the various agencies, although I know he's worked with them all along. Lane said, in quotes in that memo, there are two different kinds of feature articles that should be written about the People's Temple. They are to be placed in publications on the left. This is just what the left needed. One should deal, if there is a left anymore, one should deal with a campaign to destroy the People's Temple together with the work that the People's Temple has done in opposition to the war in Vietnam and in opposition to racism. We just found out this week that Jim Jones was supporting Richard Nixon and various Republicans and members of the Birch Society, funding them and working with them. But Mark Lane says, use this campaign. One, tell the harassment that is coming down on them, and two, tell the work in opposition to racism. He says an entirely separate article could be written in depth of the miracle of Jonestown. Lane suggested that you contact special interest publications, those that deal with the elderly, let's appeal to the old people, the Native American Indians, the blacks, the people with health care problems. It is important that there be a comprehensive film seen throughout the U.S. and the Caribbean and elsewhere in the world that would sell the Jonestown story. Lane said, I've already made contact with the finest French television documentary filmmaker and urged him to see the whole story of Jonestown. In addition, Lane says, we should concentrate upon Geraldo Rivera for a special report on Jonestown and for ABC television. Remember that Lane is the only researcher at all who gets on Rivera and some of these national television shows. We should meet with Jack Anderson and his aide, who is a friend of mine, Les Witten, who can run a story predicting that we will be filing action in the near future. Now remember, Jack Anderson is a man who's covered up every assassination that the various persons like myself have been trying to open up on John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, the Watergate story, the Wallace shooting, the Chappaquiddick, and here's the man whose program Mark Lane puts his client, James Earl Ray, prior to the House Select Committee hearings to have Jack say, James Earl Ray is lying, there's no conspiracy. And Lane is saying, I have contacts, these are my friends, Jack Anderson and Les Witten, will run stories with them. Lane said it is particularly important to create an appropriate and truthful image of People's Temple among the organizations on the left in the United States and among black people in the United States. I've already relayed these facts about the temple to Dick Gregory and Ralph Abernathy and various organizations of the left. See what Lane does? He jazzes up a place to sell it. He calls it counterintelligence. He sells it as a fantastic thing. He brings in all the liberals and Marxists into this thing so that they can write articles and look totally ridiculous when 900 people get their injections. They said this week that out of the 910 or 11 that there were 700 murders, that there were injection shots in the arms where they couldn't have given it to themselves. So that means that a couple of hundred took this Kool-Aid by mouth, and the others were all injected and were actually murdered. And somebody testified who was nearby that they heard the fellows, when it was all over, giving a hip hip hooray, and they were laid out in a certain position and taken away from the pavilion and put face down. They could tie in all the politicians. They could watch these people die. They were dying when Lane took off of the force with Charles Gary. He knew that they were all going to die. He can reap the money, and then he goes on to the next project. And what in the hell is going to be his next project? It'll be hard for him to outdo this one, but isn't this sickening? September the 27th, he got a memo on how to plan his attack, and then October the 5th, he had a press conference on KGO in San Francisco. He was on telling him about this. I talked about that on the first tape, The Wonders of Jonestown. He had a press conference in Los Angeles and the various newspaper people, and he said this is a socialist country and that it's embarrassing to the United States that such a campaign that's so fine would be an embarrassment to the United States. Part of his strategy was to get in Andrew Young, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and call attention to what is happening in terms of medicine and progress down in Guyana. This hour tape goes too fast. I'm sorry, there's no more space, so we'll have to continue next week. This is Mae Bressel and Carmel.